faded into the background while I figured out some way to fight back. Now I'm stuck up here. My next big accomplishment will be to find some air to breathe once this backpack runs dry. And every step I take moves me farther from the launch pad where spacecraft take off for Earth. He spotted the tempo. A rounded hump of rubble that looked at first like an abandoned slag heap. But there was an airlock on one side of it, and an antenna poking up from its top. And a parade of boot prints in front of the airlock, Dan saw. In the undisturbed airlessness of the moon, it was impossible to tell how fresh the prints were. They could have been left by Armstrong and Aldrin, if the Apollo 11 crew had landed at this spot. Dozens of prints, overlapping, exposing the bright sandy-looking underlayer of the regolith. In a few million years' time, they would be darkened by solar radiation, just as the undisturbed top layer was. The prints appeared out of nowhere, seemingly. Then Dan realized that people came this far in a cable car, got down from the car by ladder, and walked to the Tempo's airlock. How recently? He studied the prints for a few swift moments. There seemed to be just as many heading out as heading in, but he could not be certain. Shaking his head inside the helmet, Dan decided to push on. I'm not walking into any trap they've set up for me, he told himself. I'd rather run out of oxygen first. Nearly 3 hours later, he was wondering when he would run out of oxygen. The Tempos had been placed an hour's walk apart. That was the theory. It had taken Dan considerably more than an hour to reach the next one, and it, too, had plenty of boot prints around its airlock hatch. So he went on. Trudging up the mountainside, Dan eyed the poles that held the cable. There were sensors atop each pole, he knew. The scientists used them to study the electric fields set up by the incoming solar wind and the moon's faint magnetic field. Have they put cameras up there? Are they watching me? He pictured Kate Williams laughing her head off, watching him stumbling along, knowing exactly where he was every moment of his supposed escape. Bust your guts laughing, he muttered. Then he remembered his suit radio. He clicked it on and tuned to each frequency it could reach. No calls to him demanding his surrender. No security traffic at all. Nothing but the usual bored chatter between workers and the regular Alphonsus news and entertainment stations. Dan stayed with the classical music station. They were playing Sibelius's Valse Triste. He wished it were something more energetic and less gloomy. The suit smelled funny. Maybe the oxygen's contaminated, he thought. Or whoever was in this shell before me left a powerful body odor in it. Or maybe I'm starting to crack up. Whatever, the next shelter is it. I'm going in no matter what. He had reached a ridge of flat ground, something of a shelf that jutted out from the shoulder of the mountain. The crest seemed within reach, but there in the middle of the ridge sat the unmistakable humped pile of bulldozed rubble that marked another tempo. Dan clumped tiredly over to it. Sure enough, there were plenty of boot prints all around the airlock hatch. What the hell? He said to himself. He slid the hatch back and stepped in. The airlock cycled automatically, and most of the stiffness of his suit wilted away as the air pressure built up to normal. The light panel turned green, and Dan slid the inner hatch open. A huge, shaggy-maned, red-bearded man was standing at the hatch, massive fists planted on his hips, a fierce scowl on his flushed face. "Who the hell are you?" Dan blurted. The man snarled back.
"And just who the fuck are you?"
18. Dan stared at the big, red-bearded stranger. Beyond his giant bulk, the shelter looked as if it had been turned into a home. He saw two pairs of double bunks, a desk with a computer atop it, and rough shelves stacked with canned foods all the way up the curved ceiling.
"I asked you a question," the big man said. "Who are you? What are you doing here?"
"I asked you first," said Dan, taking a booted step further into the shelter. The man looked like anything but a GEC enforcer, or a Yamagata employee for that matter. His coveralls were frayed and faded, even patched at the knees, stained with oil and dirt. His wild hair hadn't seen a scissors in months, and his beard looked as if it could be home to an entire biota of its own. "He's sure not one of my people," Dan told himself.
"Now look," the man growled. "I've asked you twice. I won't ask a third time. Who the fuck are you?"
Grinning, Dan slid his helmet visor up. He had been in his share of fights on the moon. This big goon was in his coveralls, while Dan was still encased in his pressure suit and helmet. If it came to a fight, it would be no contest, despite the stranger's size. "You're trespassing on Yamagata Industries territory," Dan said. "And from the looks of it, you're stealing equipment and supplies to boot." The man roared and made a grab for Dan. Inside his cumbersome suit, Dan made no attempt to evade him. He jabbed with a stiff left, ready to follow it with an overhand right, but the giant let the left bounce off his chin with no apparent effect, and before Dan could throw his haymaker, he grabbed Dan by the armpits and lifted him off his feet, suit and all. Suddenly, Dan was dangling in midair, feet pedaling uselessly, his arms flailing, while the giant roared in his face and shook him like a terrier breaking a rat's back. Dan rattled around inside his suit, banging his head inside the helmet. He could not breathe. He tasted blood in his mouth. His whole world was shaking and roaring. He saw stars flashing, and everything started to go gray.
"That's enough," I said. "You don't want to kill him until we find out who he is and what he's doing here."
The giant let Dan fall to the floor with a thunderous thump. Pain shot through him. "Cripes, he's broken every bone in my body," Dan thought.
"Let me talk to him."
Dan looked up through bleary eyes and slowly focused on the wrinkled, shriveled face of an ancient black man. He was tiny, the smallest and skinniest man Dan had ever seen. And old, far older than anyone Dan had seen on the moon. Like the giant, the black man's coveralls were tattered and grimy. The scrawny little man squatted beside Dan's prostrate form, bent his face close to Dan's, and said in a voice like sandpaper,
"You gotta excuse my big friend. He's got a real short fuse."
Dan nearly gagged at the man's breath. Every part of his body hurt.
"We don't get a whole lot of visitors here," rasped the old man.
Dan nodded weakly.
"Now I'd appreciate it if you'd kindly tell us just who the hell you are."
Slowly, painfully, Dan propped himself up on one elbow, still breathing hard.
"If you don't talk to me, Big George here'll go back to kicking the shit out of you."
Grinning weakly, Dan managed to say, "No, thanks."
"Then who are you?"
the old man asked sharply.
"What you doing out here?"
"Give me a minute."
"To think up a story," growled Big George.
The old man held up a hand.
"Let him catch his breath, Georgie."
He finally managed to say, "I'm Dan Randolph. I'm on the run from the GEC.
"Dan Randolph?" blurted Big George. "Not fucking likely. I worked for Dan Randolph. He's one of the richest bastards in the fucking universe."
"I was," Dan said, pulling himself up to a sitting position. "Double damn GEC stole everything I own."
"We ain't heard nothing about that," said the old man.
"Just happened today. I took off before they could grab me and send me back Earthside."
"And you just happened to drop into our shelter," Big George said, his bearded face full of suspicion.
"That's right." The old man rose to his feet.
"Help him up, Georgie."
Before Dan could react, Big George leaned down, grabbed him again, and lifted him upright.
"Get that suit off him. We can use it," said the old man.
His voice sounded like an old-time diesel rig grinding its gears. "I've told you my name," Dan said as he lifted his helmet off. "What about yours?" The old man cast him a sour look.
"This is Big George," he said, pointing with his thumb. "They call me Pops Tucker."
"They? Who?"
"None of your fucking business," George snarled. "Now peel off that suit or I'll take it off for you."
Dan started to open up the seals on his cuffs. He heard the chugging of air blowers and thought that the square anodized blue case sitting in the far corner of the shelter looked like an air regenerator from an OTV. "They obviously don't work for Yamagata," he thought, "and they sure don't work for me. They've turned this tempo into living quarters for more than two people, if the other bunks mean anything." And the little guy said, "They call him Pops Tucker. Who the hell are they?" Lifting the hard-shell torso of his suit over his head, Dan told them, I'm going